chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. Now News Talk 1360 WCHL presents Side Dish, hosted by Deborah Miller. Tune in for 30 minutes of tasty talk with culinary aficionados, wine connoisseurs, and more. Side Dish is locally produced by News Talk 1360 WCHL. Now let's get to the tasty talk with Deborah Miller.
Welcome to Side Dish. I'm Deborah Miller. I am here today around my table. I am really lucky to have Sherry Castle, and she has brought the most gorgeous cookbook I have seen in a long, long time. And you're going to have to describe what this is on the cover of this, because neither you and I have eaten, and we're ready to just pick that up and put that in our mouths. The book is The New Southern Garden Cookbook. It's beautiful. It's enjoying the best from homegrown gardens, farmers markets, roadside stands, and CSA farm boxes. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
It's been a little while since you've been around the table, haven't you?
It has. I think it's when I just came back from Italy with Slow Foods. Might have been the last time I was here.
Did. I remember us talking about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how long has this been in the works?
I had a year to write that. The entire process was a little closer to 2.5 years, but my part, I had a year. Then I turned it in to the publisher. They gave me some edits. We got the photography done. And then it takes them close to a year to get their production, their design, the printing, and all of that. But it was a busy year.
Does it really take that long?
It does. The average life cycle from when you sign a contract to when it hits the shelf is 3 years.
I guess I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. I figured it happened quicker than that.
No, it's a big to-do. There's a lot of people have to do things. A lot of full-time jobs go into making a book.
Well, what was the inspiration for it being having to do with the Southern Garden?
Well, it was really a couple of things. The first thing is I am happier in a farmer's market than anywhere. When I go to other cities, instead of going to museums and things, I'm the person that hits the farmer's markets. I make a point of going to my own local farmer's market every time they're open. And I realized that it really defined the way that I cooked, because I believe that if you start with the best ingredients, things that are available locally and in their best form, and go with what's good and then decide what to make, it's an easy way to be a very good cook and a successful meal planner.
So you never really know what you're going to cook until you've gotten home.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, like everybody else, you know, we have cravings. I have a teenage daughter and a husband, and, you know, it's like, oh, man, we got to have so-and-so night. But I do try to be responsive to what I see, not only at a farmer's market, but even within the grocery store. If you look, there are things that look better than other things. They have a better value, better freshness, perhaps specials and so forth. So maybe I'm an opportunistic cook, that I just try to take advantage of things that are the best price and the best value and in the best form.
Well, that's a nice way to describe it, opportunistic.
Yes.
So I guess over, when you're writing a book like this that is a combination of recipes and great stories, and I want us to talk about the stories, what comes first, the recipe or the story?
Sometimes both. The first decision for me was the organization of the book. Before I even knew what the categories were going to be, I was certain the way I was going to write it. And it's organized by the fruit and vegetable. It starts with apples and goes through zucchini. And the reason I chose
A to Z,
exactly. The reason I chose that organization is because that is the way that fresh food often comes to us. Whether we have a garden in our backyard, or our mamas or our uncles or some neighbor has a garden and they give us things, whether you have a CSA or go to the farmer's market, you tend to say, look at all those great tomatoes, or look at this bushel of beans, or this handful of whatever. And so since that's how the food comes to us, I decided how I was going to let the recipes come to the reader, so that they can look up, instead of flipping through things and say, man, what am I going to do with zucchini? They go to the zucchini section. By the same token, if they are looking for a specific kind of recipe, a course, an appetizer, a soup or something, all that's in the index. They can go in that direction as well.
Oh, how fun. So I guess one of my questions would be, are these all recipes that you had or you you did as you went along?
No, it's a combination of things. There are a few things that I have been making for years, you know, family favorites, things that have been highly successful in my cooking classes. But I really wanted to make sure I was given a fresh voice to this. Mm-hmm. So to come down, and I actually did narrow down to the 350 recipes that are in here, I probably made 1,200 to 1,500 new things that went through my kitchen to, you know, and some things were good, but maybe not appropriate for the book. Some things were ideas that didn't quite coalesce. Some things I didn't think were inventive enough. And so I really, you know, when it came down to those, I said, which ones are the best expression of this product? You know, the best thing I can say about tomatoes or corn or butter beans or something, or which ones have a great story, mm-hmm. or which ones have some sort of cultural relevance that needs to be respected and talked about a little bit. At my house, we came to use the term bookworthy. We would say, really, now taste this. Is this bookworthy? And after about a year of that, I had it narrowed down to the 300 plus that made it on the pages.
And that was your family doing that?
Family, friends, colleagues, all sorts of folks, you know, because this book is very, very, very much focused to home cooks. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a professional cook, but I'm also a working mom. I live in the real world. I don't have a restaurant. I don't have a staff. I bought all the groceries, did all the cooking, and washed all the dishes in making this book, because that's how most of us really are. So I ask a lot of different palates and a lot of different opinions on whether this was food that they thought would be popular nationwide.
And did they, at any point, did they say, gosh, if you just added kumquat to this, it would be fabulous? Or did they leave that to you, at the final thing to you, to say, maybe it does need tweaking or maybe it isn't?
Well, usually it kind of came down to me, because since I've been a professional recipe developer, I wear a number of hats. I teach classes, I do food writing, but I do recipe testing and development for hire for all sorts of folks, for other cookbooks, for restaurants, for newspapers and magazines. So, you know, being in the business of writing recipes and finessing recipes and inventing them, I've got a pretty good sense. If somebody says, it needs a little something, I can sort of guess what that little something ought to be.
I guess I did not realize that you did all that stuff, that recipe testing mm-hmm. for hire.
I really do.
It's got to be fun.
It's fun, but it's a job like anything else. I take it very seriously. The main thing is when I'm doing recipe testing for other clients, I have to be a different person. When I'm cooking for me, I'm intuitive, like a lot of us are. Pinch of this, pinch of that, and so forth. Mm-hmm. When I'm writing recipes that have to work in print, I have laptops, I have scales, weights. I turn my kitchen into a laboratory. I like to say I turn my cap around, and I really bring out the other side of my brain and the way that I cook.
The scientist cap.
Exactly. And I used to work in the software business, believe it or not, and I think that all those years of working with computer manuals made me a really good recipe writer. That they're friendly, they're conversational, but they're logical, but they make sense. And, you know, a book ought to make sense.
Well, we're going to have to go to a break in a second. But before we go, and we're talking with Sherry Castle, and we're looking into her new book, The New Southern Garden Cookbook. Where's the book on sale?
Everywhere. It's in all local, regional, national bookstores and online, too.
And you said it's $35.
Yes.
Well worth it. It is gorgeous. It's hefty. What'd you say, 300, 350 recipes?
About 350.
And you have a book signing coming up on May 22nd at 3 Cups. So let's talk a little bit more when we come back. You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360.
We now return to Side Dish, News Talk 1360 WCHL's locally produced program dedicated to all things food. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I'm your host, Deborah Miller, and I have around my table with me today, Sherry Castle, and we are drooling, at least I am drooling over her new cookbook, The New Southern Garden Cookbook. And right before we went to break, we were talking about a book signing coming up, It is at Three Cups.
It is Three Cups, wonderful local coffee, wine, and chocolate shop here in Chapel Hill. It's going to be on a Sunday evening, May 22nd. And on that one, it's going to be a little bit different. In addition to a signing and a reading, I'm going to be doling out all sorts of samples. I'm going to throw down, as they say, on this one. And I know a few of the things I'm going to make. I haven't fully decided, but they're going to do a wine pairing with it, and it's going to be a come-and-go reception. But
so it's free.
It is free.
May 22nd at 8 p.m.?
Actually, I think it's from 4 to 6. I might have said 8, but I think it's from 4 to 6. And I hope folks will come out because it's a good chance to see that great shop and to hang out with me and have something good to eat.
And try some of your beautiful nosh.
Exactly.
So we were talking a little bit during the break. If this would make a great Mother's Day gift, and you were indicating that there are... You've already done a ton of interviews around town, and by the time this airs, it's going to be Mother's Day.
Right.
So you had said there were signed copies?
Yes. Flyleaf, McIntyre's, Quail Ridge Books, Barnes & Noble, Bloom and Southern Village. They've got some at a Southern Season. And I have signed copies. The book is doing well, and the local booksellers asked me to sign some so they would have them on hand. So if someone needs to pick up a last-minute Mother's Day gift, they can have one that's already been signed.
I wonder if I should buy one for myself and sign it from my dog.
That's it. That's it. I have a dog child. I think I understand gifts from dog children.
Well, so let's talk about what this beautiful photograph on the cover. Did you take the cover photography too?
I did not take the pictures. A wonderful photographer from Durham named Stuart Waller did. UNC Press hired him, but I did all the food styling. It was important to me to know what images are in there, which is a little unusual. A lot of cookbooks, the author never even sees the images. They let me. And so all of that cooking was done in my home. We did it on a quick turnaround. The cover picture is on my front porch, and what that is... it is what I like to call a butter bean and heirloom tomato Napoleon, or a shortcake, a savory shortcake. Most people think it's a biscuit, but it's actually a round of cornbread, although a biscuit will work. And layered in that are
It looks like a sandwich.
It looks like a sandwich, and it's stacked.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful stack, and it's alternating colors. And
yes, heirloom tomatoes, locally grown heirloom tomatoes. There's some crisp pancetta, which is Italian bacon, in there. And then around the base are butter beans, those tiny, sweet, delicate, gorgeous local beans from Brinkley Farms. And I cook those, and then I finish them with creme fraiche, fresh thyme, and cracked pepper, and that's spooned around the edge. Yeah, it's one of my signature recipes. I've served that quite a bit. You know, when someone says, okay, what's new in the world of gardening or what's new in the world of Southern food, I bring out savory shortcakes.
That is beautiful, and that recipe is in this book.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think I'm just going to be making that this weekend, maybe in celebration of Mother's Day.
That would be a good thing.
That is really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so when... was it hard to take the photographs? Was everything in season?
No, it wasn't. So, but yet I needed to have a series of photographs that captured the whole book, the scope of things, that there's fresh food year round. You know, I wanted to make sure that people understood that it wasn't vegetarian necessarily or side dishes necessarily. And so anything that was completely out of season, I used it in a form where it wasn't as obvious. You know, if I wanted something to really have like a whole fresh peach, I had to do it in that season. But for some of the winter things, where they were cooked, like cooked greens or cooked winter squash, right, it was less obvious that it was out of season. Ideally, we would have had a full calendar year, you know, to truly follow the seasons for the photography. In fact, we had 6 days.
Oh, my gosh. Well, they did a beautiful job.
Yes, I'm very, very pleased.
This looks like it came right out of sometime in August.
Yes.
Done it.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that picture, it was either April or May when we did it. I had to go around to my farmer friends and say, can you get me anything on the early side that we can use this? I'm lucky that I know a lot of farmers.
You are. Now, so one of the things that is fascinating to me, and I don't get one because living alone, I feel like it's too much food for me. Do you get a CSA box?
I don't, but I have friends who do. I know how it works. I'm a big proponent of CSAs, but it. I'd rather go to the market because that's a real pleasurable thing for me. But I think CSAs are a wonderful solution for families that are busy on the weekends and cannot go to the market.
Tell everybody what a CSA is.
That stands for Community Supported Agriculture. And at its most basic, it's a subscription to a farm or sometimes a cooperative of farmers. Generally contains fruits and vegetables, although some CSAs have local eggs, maybe local, you know, sustainable humane meat, maybe even some baked goods. But the idea is that a family or a consumer will subscribe at the beginning of a season to get regular deliveries from that farm. They pay up front, like subscribing to a magazine. And in exchange, they get regular shares of the output, you know, of whatever that farm has. So it's like, you know, subscribing to a farm. And it is an incredible way to get fresh food regularly from someone you know. From your own community.
I guess you could go in and share a CSA with somebody would probably be... I'm like you. I enjoy the sensory experience of being at the farmer's market and smelling everything and holding it. And, I mean, once I've put that tomato in my hand, it might as well go on a sandwich.
Exactly.
Or in my mouth.
But, you know, CSAs, it used to be that you had to go out and find them yourself, but now so many workplaces, a number of the corporations in RTP, for example, will offer CSAs to their employees. Mm-hmm. All they have to do is, you know, like, at their lunch break on Friday or something, pick up the CSA. A number of the hospitals are doing it. A number of different entities are doing CSAs. There are even businesses that will, go and get the things from the various farms, assemble the boxes and deliver them to your home. Instead of Avon calling, it's, you know, asparagus calling.
Oh, I love that. Well, you can't argue with that.
No,
What a great idea.
It is a great idea because, you know, there are all sorts of economic and environmental reasons to grow local, but the thing that no one can question is the flavor. If you have strawberries that are on the vine and fully ripened by the sun until their natural sweetness is at its peak, and you eat them versus berries that are brought from who knows what time zone, picked solely for shipability, and then gassed to change color, which one's going to taste better and which one is ultimately a much better value? You save money by buying the best stuff when it's in season in our own communities.
I know which one I'd want to eat.
Exactly.
I mean, you can tell, I think, and we're lucky enough that we've got a bunch of great farmers markets around
here. We do. Yeah, we're the envy of much of the country.
We are, and we don't even realize it because we're so close to it. We're going to have to go to break again. We're talking with Sherry Castle, author of the new Southern Garden Cookbook, gorgeous big 350 recipes. And when we come back, we're going to, I want to talk a little bit more about the stories.
Sure.
You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360.
We now return to Side Dish, News Talk 1360 WCHL's locally produced program dedicated to all things food. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for.
Welcome back to Side Dish. I have around the table with me today Sherry Castle. We're old friends, and what I need to do is get on your friend invite to come talk about book-worthy recipes at your dinner table.
We'll make it happen.
We're talking about the new Southern Garden Cookbook, and one of the wonderful things about this book is that it's interlaced with stories, and the recipes are stories, and so, and we also love that it. The way that it's written, with your ingredients and everything, it's that sort of telling a story, too.
Right.
And I said, let's look at this butterbean heirloom tomato cornbread shortcakes that are on the cover. Tell us about that.
Well, it came out, it was sort of inspired by something I ate when I was growing up. I grew up in, you know, in a farm family way up in the mountains of North Carolina. And I actually invented this recipe for a Southern Foodways Alliance event a few years ago where I wanted to showcase some North Carolina stuff in a different way. So the cornbread, good old Southern cornbread, but it's made in a drop biscuit pan. So it comes out in a little round, similar to the size of an English muffin. Mm-hmm. And then there's just slices of the best tomato you can find. find. You know, wherever you live, there's a good tomato. And then the pancetta is just bacon, sort of like a BLT, mm-hmm. except it comes in rounds. And then butter beans are maybe one of my favorite foods on earth. And so I really wanted to talk about the beans and, you know, why beans are important in our culture. And I think they're sort of an underutilized, underappreciated ingredient. And when it all added up, I came up with these savory shortcakes. And that's sort of typical of my food, to have something slightly different, but not odd, a little creative, and a riff, like, you know, calling a shortcake being something savory as opposed to sweet. I tend to combine herbs with my sweetness. I tend to take ordinary things that we're accustomed to and put them together in ways that are a little bit fresh and exciting.
Well, I'm looking forward to looking through and getting a couple of recipes from here. I have to say, and this is a horrible confession, I hate my cornbread that I make. But I keep making it. I keep trying other people's mm-hmm. recipes, and I have yet to find one that I've said, this is my new cornbread recipe.
Well, I hope you'll like mine. I have often said that if anything makes me famous, not that I'm counting on that, but if it makes me famous, it will be my cornbread. Even amongst the old timers in the little mountain town where I live, it is, people are just going crazy about this cornbread. It's going around my dad's community. My dad said if one more person asked him how to make it, he was just going to put it in the church bulletin and be done with it.
Well, you could sell books.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
I mean, one of the things you were saying, easily accessible. For instance, I mean, you say real skillet cornbread, page 391, mm-hmm. freshly baked and piping hot. Bacon slices cooked, crisped, and drained. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, every one of your ingredients, you tell exactly.
Exactly. I don't think that a cookbook should ever ambush anyone. I think that you should be able to know what to expect and also have flexibility. For every one of these recipes where it was an option at all, I give people alternative ways to either make it or alternative ingredients.
See. Variations.
Variations. And there's also, for a lot of these recipes, something called what else works. That if you've got green beans instead of asparagus, and my asparagus recipes can be made with other vegetables, I will let you know so that you have ultimate flexibility to do it the way that works in your kitchen and with what you have on hand.
You don't know how much I appreciate your coming and visiting with me and talking about this book. And like I said, I think I'm going to try the cornbread recipe, and good luck with this book.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. It's been the most exciting thing I've ever done professionally, and it's a privilege to get to talk about it.
Well, I want you to come back and talk about it like a couple of months down the road, and we'll see how it did. And you're getting ready to go on the road in the
yes.
United States, so I want to hear all about that.
You got it.
Thank you, Sherry Castle.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're listening to Side Dish on WCHL 1360.
Thanks for listening to Side Dish. Download this and all episodes of Side Dish from WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Side Dish is an exclusive broadcast of News Talk 1360 WCHL, Chapel Hill Carrboro's News Talk and Tar Heel Station.